Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Teo Olatunde, business transformation expert currently working on GDPR compliance.
Because it's something that it's not common across, you know, your industry, and it's something that I think it's gaining ground, and it's something that I'm certain will gain even bigger ground, you know, over time.
Yeah, we hope so. You know, I mean, I think that it serves its purpose really well. You know, I think that the opportunity to collaborate with people on a kind of piece of content format like this is fantastic for so many different reasons. You know, it's such a great learning opportunity, first and foremost, I think. And to just for my own selfish reasons, I like doing them. Just, you know, I'm always learning things. You know, I'm kind of obsessed with technology anyway, and the different fields. So it's always fascinating for me. And of course, whenever Dan sends me anyone over, it's always brilliant because he obviously works within kind of the data BI. So, like, for me, that's really compelling space at the moment. So, which I'm sure we're going to talk about anyway. So, you know, it's whenever he sends me someone over and he's like, oh, such and such a body would be great for the show. I'm always like, I'm all over it because, you know, it is a compelling space at the minute. There's no two ways about it. So you must be, it must keep you pretty excited, you know, going to work. I mean, there must be, a kind of a buzz around kind of your department at the moment.
It is. You know, I live by one mantra. I can't remember. It was a philosopher. I can't remember his name. And the mantra is, you know, find a job you love and you never have to work a day in your life. So I've been fortunate that all the clients I've worked with, all the jobs I've had in a permanent capacity, I've always done something that I enjoyed and something that I love. So, you know, working the late night hour has never really been a problem for me where I've had to over a course of a period, you know, and just with the clients I'm working with at the moment as well, especially as you've mentioned, working in data, that space generally is exciting times when you look at, you know, the technologies, you know, what you can do with data, the visualization tools. And then again, you look at the new EU regulations surrounding data and how that will impact organizations and how they deal with personal data and stuff. I mean, it is exciting when you put all that together and then you just try and make sense of it and try and create sort of like a vision for your organization and just the thought process around creating that vision. It is exciting.
Yeah. Oh, there's no question. There's no question. So I want to kind of kick things off. I mean, I want to kind of dive in really and talk a lot about data and kind of some of the things that you find, you know, particularly compelling. But for you, were you kind of always, growing up and stuff, were you always kind of an analytical thinker? Were you always kind of that way inclined? Did it always make sense that you'd kind of end up in looking at data in some kind of capacity?
Well, it's a good question because my background, well, I started off, just to give you a bit of a background, I'm originally from Nigeria, so born in Nigeria, but grew up in New York. And then went back to Nigeria, did my university, and then started off, you know, installing satellites, actually, VSAT satellites. So that gave me my background in technology. And then went on to business development, and then came to the UK to study for an MBA at Exeter. From there, just had a fantastic opportunity to work at Cisco, which, again, you know, Cisco with their technology and hardware, fantastic opportunity, learned a lot of stuff around, you know, networking, the hardware aspects of networking, but more specifically around the analytical aspects of it and the strategic aspects of providing such services to organizations. And then I went on to BT. I was at BT for about 4 years, working primarily as a business process improvement consultant, working on various process improvement initiatives. One of the key ones was the 21st Century Network Program, which you will now see as what you see as products such as BT Infinity. So at that time, we were rolling out fiber across the country to deliver what you now see as BT Infinity. So I worked on a lot of the plan and order processes to deliver that and many other aspects of that program. And then I left BT, and for the last, say, 6 years, I've been, you know, running my small business, providing various consulting, analytical, architectural type services to varying clients. So I have a diverse skill set, but over the last, should I say, 18 months, I've noticed that a lot of the skills that I'm using that I have been using have evolved around data, data management, data analysis, but not core data analysis, just more around the management of data. And that's led me to my current current client I'm working with.
And you know, when you were rolling out such a big scale project like the BT Infinity, then you compare that to kind of solo like consulting, assuming like slightly smaller project, you know, what are some of the main kind of differences, I suppose, that you know, is that what did you not like about kind of working on such a large scale project?
I think one of the advantages that immediately comes to mind is the opportunity to meet different people and work with different people across the country, because BT, as you know, is a massive organization. And then to take on a program the size of the 21st Century Network at the time, again, massive initiative. So it required traveling across the country, meeting various people, colleagues and stuff. And I think one of the things that sticks out is, you know, just the diverse nature of the people you were working with, from field engineers. There are days that I had to work with field engineers just to understand the specifics of their type of work, the headaches that they face when they visit customer sites or client sites, and, you know, all in a bid to try and improve the operational processes for them and identify ways of introducing technology to simplify just that piece of work, you know. So that definitely is something that I still take as one of the key components of my time at BT.
And that, you know, you were saying the kind of the diversity and the nature of having so many different people around you, you know, it's kind of in one place. Do you ever think that everyone kind of on that project is internally thinking, so they're still kind of in a bubble, even though the project's so big? Or do you think that it's kind of bubble proof?
It is definitely bubble proof, because the beauty of that program at the time was that the people that we were meeting, so I sat in the business process team, and, you know, for every program or every project within BT, you would have a business process improvement lead, and that person's remit was to look at, you know, the objectives from purely business process improvement view. So whilst I was part of the program and part of a smaller team, a lot of my colleagues that I met outside of that quote unquote bubble were not specifically working on any aspect of the program. So that in a way gave us an impartial view of what we're doing. Sometimes, you know, we did get, you know, some information or news that we didn't particularly, you know, like, But again, when you get that 360 kind of view of what you're doing and getting opinions from people who are not, you know, privy to the finer details of the program, it always helps. And I think overall, I think that was one of the key benefits of my role, where I had to consistently traverse, you know, the country, meeting colleagues to provide input into the program.
I suppose with that in mind, you still have to be, I think, still naturally kind of inclined or motivated or engaged in the actual project. And to obviously, I think, have any kind of success at anything, I think I'm a believer that that has to be the case. And for you, when you take on a project like that, is it even as much about kind of the size of the scale of the project, or is it just as far as, you know, what the project is, so what the actual outcome, what the product is? Or is it more about kind of the challenge that really engages and sort of motivates you?
First and foremost, the challenge. And secondly, the fact that, you know, my skill sets can be applied to deliver an end goal. All the projects that I've worked on, I've always seen them to challenge me in one way or the other. Either it could be, you know, gaining another skill set in order to achieve the objectives. It could be a case of learning something completely new. But at the end of the day, I think, again, speaking from my experience, I think if you take on any project or any piece of work, I think the challenge has to be there to motivate you, you know, to get it done, to the best of your ability.
You know, as long as kind of you've been involved in technology in the space and analytics, and, you know, what do you think, as far as, aside from the technology, I think, you know, because I do want to talk about that and how that's kind of changed in the time that you've been involved with it, and now obviously the capabilities that are involved with that. But aside from the technology, what do you think have been some of the things since you started that you've noticed the most?
That's a good question. I think technology, once you take technology out of it, it doesn't leave much to consider. But if you take technology away, I think the organizational structure is another thing that, you know, has changed dramatically over the last, should I say, 3 to 5 years, where you now have organizations that have CDOs, chief data officers. I mean, 5-6 years ago, probably if you were to count on one hand the number of companies or organizations that had a CDO role, probably struggle. I think organizational structure is definitely, you know, something that if you look at the journey over the last 5 years, that has dramatically changed. And then you now see organizations creating business intelligence centers of excellence, dedicating a team to data analytics, business intelligence, and just trying to make sure that there is a structured approach to analytics, data analytics, when you look at, you know, the CDO role in an organization. But there are also other areas within organizational structures as well that have, you know, that's playing a bigger role. For example, you have business architecture now. You have organizations that have teams dedicated to the organization's business architecture and looking at ways of continuously tweaking roles and responsibilities to make organizations more efficiently, and also reducing overhead when you look at, you know, full-time employees. So if going back to your question, I'd say after technology, the biggest change within organizations is the organizational structure.
Right. Yeah. I think it's interesting, isn't it, that we now think that innovation and technology are like this synonymous thing, but it's never, yeah. That's not always been the case. We just now just assume that that is the case. And that's where we kind of seem to be putting all of our energy in there. But, you know, I mean, since we're in the business of people, you know, we take an interest in kind of the people, and it's interesting, yeah, that, like, even though all that innovation is happening in technology, there doesn't, like you were saying, there doesn't seem to have been that much that's really been happened in the workspace.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. And, you know, it's a question that I ask myself, and I think it still boils down to, you know, the old mentality we have around, you know, you need to be behind the desk, you need to come to the office, you know, to show that you are, you know, working. But I think more and more, as you look at the more younger organizations, they are receptive to the idea of, you know, telecommuting, working from home, working wherever you find convenient. And I think bigger organizations that have, you know, thousands and thousands of employees, I think they're the ones that are probably slower to move towards, you know, that kind of culture when you look at working.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I think that there's still, I think maybe there is some numbers back there that people don't work as effectively outside of the office. I don't know. I don't know whether anyone's genuinely like kind of been willing to take that risk. I think, like you were saying, a lot of the startups and those kind of companies, they do like flexi hours and all these kind of different incentives for people. But even it's kind of contradictory as well. I think people think of startups as kind of that way of like being flexi and doing all working from the couch and all these kind of things. But, you know, the actual like idea behind the Google headquarters and the Facebook and stuff like that is to build an environment where people stay in the office longer. That's literally what it was intended for. So we still seem to think that being in that environment is going to yield productivity. And you know what? They might be right, and maybe that is the reason for it. I don't know. But, you know, I think it's just one example where it's not being questioned enough. And I think that the people's lives and lifestyles should come first always before anything else at the end of the day. And I think, you know, generally speaking, and from my experiences, when people are happy at work, they generally work better.
Anything that organizations can do to help, you know, their staff balance, you know, the tricky nature of work and the home front, you know, anything that organizations can do to aid that would breed loyalty from their staff.
I think maybe this next generation may think a little bit differently, I suppose. Maybe we've just got kind of that a few from the Gen X or whatever it is that are still running the show. Maybe the next gen after that will come through and think about things in a little bit.
Yeah, just to chip in though, I believe I read it somewhere during my time at BT that BT actually pioneered the whole idea of flexi working and working from home in the UK. So BT has always been at the forefront of you know, allowing flexibility with work. So, and I think generally speaking, we have come a long way. At least, you know, there is a technology there that allows you to work seamlessly wherever you are. But again, I think it's still that mentality where, unless you're client facing, you know, it's still that mentality that, you know, you do need to sit behind a desk to work.
I think for me personally, I'm actually not too opposed to like going to an office or going to a place to work. Like, I actually now and again I'll work better from home, but I don't think I could do it every single day.
No, you're absolutely right. Neither can I. But you what you want, it's kind of like insurance. You want it to be there in case you ever need it, but you don't want to use it every time. You know, and that's how that flexibility is. You don't want to abuse it. You don't want to work from home every day, you know, unless there's a compelling reason to do so. But you also want to know that at least it's in your back pocket. If you need it to, you know, work from home for a couple of days, you need it to resume early and close very early as well. You want to know that at least it is there.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just an option rather than kind of an absolute, I think seems to be the conclusion we've drawn there. I wanted to ask you a little bit kind of about the analytics space as well. Like, there's a lot of compelling stuff going on. For yourself, like, what is it that is kind of coming into fruition at the moment that you feel is going to be the most applicable to kind of the everyday life and have the most impact on the application of technology and people's day-to-day lives.
I think when you put those two together, I think AR, the other one to virtual reality, the augmented reality, that's it. That's the word I'm looking for. I think that is the biggest change that's coming that will also have a huge impact on the way we live. That, and then when you compare and combine that with, you know, the Internet of Things, I think those two, they're just literally around the corner now in terms of penetration into our daily lives. I mean, look how big the Pokemon game, look how big that was when it was launched. And then when you now start looking at the limitless opportunities we now have with augmented reality, you know, what we potentially can do with it. In driving, you know, where you can easily have your map on your screen, on your windshield. There's so many things. I mean, it's limitless what, you know, the opportunities there. And then when we also look at, you know, Internet of Things as well, and the smart homes and, you know, the opportunities in that area as well. I'm very, very plugged in into technologies, but particularly around, you know, smart homes and stuff. And I just look at the various, you know, should I say, gadgets out there. You look at the Ring doorbell to Alexa, Amazon Echo, to, you know, the Nest thermostat. And then you start to look at why, you know, all the big organizations are looking in that space now. Apple with HomeKit, Amazon trying to use, you know, the Alexa platform. And then you look at Nest, you know, owned by Google. And then you can just, you know, start to scratch your head and wonder what's going to happen next.
Do you think, I mean, I think that kind of the IoT projects that are going on, like I am so like bullish on those kind of projects and think that, I struggle to see any kind of negativity around those kind of projects. But when I look at AR, like, I still think it's super interesting. But at the same time, I'm a little bit more of a skeptic about AR. And I think that's probably natural, because I think that, you know, people get obsessed with things. And the idea of kind of living in this, like, separate reality or whatever, it's like something out of a film, isn't it?
Well, that's one way to look at it. Let me use a scenario now. I think, you know, just at the beginning of this call, we were talking about, you know, viewing homes and whatnot. You had two options, right? To view a home, you were looking at renting or buying, you know, and as someone who worked to schedule, you had the first option is to A, you know, commute about an hour or so to view the property, right? And then you get there, and then within 10 minutes, you feel, no, this is definitely not for me. But you had the second option of, as a first viewing, you know, you could put on a pair of glasses or goggles or whatever, and do an initial viewing of that very same property and experience, not almost the exact experience, but a 60 to 70% experience of how that property looks. And it takes you not more than 20, 25 minutes. Now, that definitely is worth it. You know, so that you imagine the amount of time you've just saved, you know, by just, you know, first viewing via AR. And then if that, you know, if it ticks the box, then you can know that, okay, now I can dedicate, you know, a couple of hours to driving down there and doing a proper detailed viewing. I mean, again, if you look at all the technologies and all the organizations out there now, one thing they all have in common is they're all trying to make things, they're all trying to improve the life of its consumers, you know, get you from A to B quicker, you renting a property for the weekend or for the week, you know, seamlessly, you know, you is ubiquitous at the moment, you know, it's just making things seamless. And the same thing with AR here is, if you look at it from the perspective of it's going to simplify how we do things, and I think, you know, it can be appealing. But again, you know, there are still some reservations around it on exactly how, you know, perhaps it could be monetized and how, you know, the security element of it. But purely from simplifying the way of life, I think it is exciting.
Yeah, I suppose that's really good. It's a great example And you really sold me on that, just because that's a current predicament for me at the moment. So yeah, well done. You really, you're. I'm conscious of time as well. Say, I know, don't want to keep you all day on your Friday. We've got the pub to get to. It's nearly 12 o'clock. So, I suppose we'll kind of close it down here. But thank you so much for taking the time. I could actually go on and on and on and talk with you.
Likewise, it has been a very interesting and engaging, you know, discussion.
I enjoyed it very much, and I'm hoping we can do it again soon. Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.